When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
So let's just test the levels now with a joke. People who...
I'll give you a joke, Dad. Just off the top of my head, people who say ketamine should be banned should get off their high horse.
Very good, Ruth. Very good.
That's just what I made up, you know, on the fly.
On the fly. Well, let's give Gary Delaney a little bit of credit for that. Meanwhile, Ruth, the big question this week is, I got very excited because Janet, my wife, your mother, said to me, you've got a parcel at home, when I was in London, came home, got to my desk where she'd put the parcel for me, and I found a leopard print set ears, the bow tie fancy dress. So basically, it's a sort of hair band.
It's a fancy dress ears, basically. I doubt the other things will be getting one. The ears will, I think.
Yeah, leopard skin. Why have I got that? I don't need it for anything.
It's a jungle themed social tonight.
Oh, it's tonight?
Yes.
Oh, it's a good job I brought it with me then.
Indeed.
Yeah. So it's jungle themed. Is that in any way cultural appropriation?
To the jungle?
To the animals?
To the animals. I don't think they're that annoyed. I didn't actually skin an animal.
I mean, I did see it on my bill.
I know, that was an accident. It's the Amazon thing. Is I use your Amazon Prime because I've got to watch my TV somewhere and, you know.
Mm. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and it's that one-click thing. They've made it too easy to buy things now. All of it. It's way too easy. Contactless.
Yeah.
And then it's the same thing. It's too easy to tweet stuff. That's why people make stupid mistakes. But I like the idea that, because I was on the phone to Mum and she's like, oh, have you ordered some like fancy dress or whatever? And she's like, oh, I am glad because I did think your dad might have lost it.
Well, that's the levels. Should we start?
Yeah, let's.
The other thing you've been doing that I know about is begging for drinks in Wetherspoons.
I don't like the term begging.
Isn't it? You put it on the internet and said...
It's something that a lot... I don't think you've just not seen it because I'm your only reference point for teenagers, really. People do it all the time. They'll just send a picture of their table number or whatever at Spoons and then people can send you whatever.
And do you have to, because I didn't send you anything, I did threaten to come over and have a drink with you in Wetherspoons, which would have been very welcome, but I didn't send you anything because I don't have the Wetherspoons app.
Yeah, you need you've got to have the app to send
But
things.
I gather some of these people that you disparagingly call my cronies actually bought you a drink.
Very, very nice of them. Very, very nice of everyone. One of my friends sent drinks and then everyone else was like... People who'd said, someone said something really nice, they were like, oh, a drink to pay you back for like all the good work you do on the podcast and stuff. It was very, very nice, actually.
And some of them were my listeners.
I think they were pretty much solely your listeners. any of my friends don't have the money.
Well, bless them. That's
yeah, very really, sweet. Thank them a lot. Nice.
Now, the big worry at the moment for all of us is coronavirus. Give me your take on it.
It's really hard, actually. I was in a seminar yesterday and he just said, the seminar like leader or professor just said, oh, by the way, like just out of curiosity, what are all the students saying about coronavirus? And none of us could really answer. No, you don't know. At the moment, like for me, it hasn't changed anything. I'm still doing the exact same routine as I always do.
Yes, you're all going to a bar tonight with your jungle dress.
Yeah, but nothing's closed. All of lectures and everything are still on. I mean, they're not because of the strikes, but they would be. Nothing has changed. So it almost feels like it's not but that big of a thing. But the more it goes on, we have been talking about it more and more and more, and about how it's actually quite scary. The mortality rate is actually really high.
Yes, compared to other diseases.
It's higher than Spanish flu.
Yes, it is.
It's 5%.
5%.
And Spanish flu was 3%, I believe.
But what I'm saying is that as kids, you will all be looking at the internet. Mm. And there's a lot of fear mongering, of course there is. And there's a lot of contradictory information. Mm. What worries me is that, of course, you've got a holiday coming up. And it's possible you may not be able to go back to uni because they may take the opportunity to actually close uni.
That's
what's happened in Italy, isn't it?
Yeah. I was in a seminar this morning as well, different professor as well. And she said, someone asked, I think they were like, oh, do you think, you know, we'll be coming back, or like, what happens? And she said, oh, at the moment, I'm really not sure. There have been in talks, like the university has, about how exams will work, if it'll all have to be changed to like open papers rather than exams, so you can do them on the internet or on the VLE, like the virtual learning environment.
What's the virtual learning environment?
That's what it's called, the VLE. It's like where all of the...
It's just like a website then, is it?
Yeah, and it's just all of your different modules are on there, and the teachers can put up all the documents that you'll need, and it's where you submit assignments and stuff. That'll be maybe something that we'll have to do. But like my exam for that module that she runs is an oral exam, a presentation in a group. So it can't really be done online. And once you've set the things for a module, it's very difficult to change them. But their main issue that she said they've been talking about is like less than closing the university or anything is how to get students back from year abroads. There's loads, like massive numbers of people who are in Spain, Italy, France, who are now stuck out there without a university to go to as well because they've all closed. So I can't imagine how like that would be really, really scary if you were in a foreign country kind of on your own already and then having to self-isolate and not being able to go to university, which like that's really, it's really scary. One of my flatmates, her boyfriend is Italian, and he left just before the full lockdown or whatever, and his mum was going to leave a little bit later. He studies in Edinburgh, and his mum was going to leave a little bit later, and then the lockdown happened, and now she can't come and join him in Edinburgh. But she asked him, oh, like, how many checks did you have to go through to get off the plane, and did they test you, and blah, blah, blah. And no one said anything to him about it, which seems...
It does seem
unreal.
Very random. The testing and everything does seem very random. Mm. I heard somebody on the radio saying that, they've had the symptoms. They think they've had the symptoms of 2 weeks. They dial 111 to try and get the test. And 2 weeks later, they've still not got the test.
Yeah.
Or 10 days, 11 days later, still not got the test.
Mm. And then, I was saying, like, this morning, I was like, I've got a bit of a cough. And it's probably just I've been at uni for 10 weeks. It's... Mm. You know, I don't get enough sleep or eat enough, like, right, probably. And that's just, you get a little bit ill. But...
Are you not eating well? How many times have I told you about eating? What are you eating?
Well, no, I do eat well and stuff, but I'm sure I don't eat as well as some people should.
No.
And I probably, like, drink too much and don't get enough sleep, all of those things.
Well, I've brought you something for you too.
Yes.
Is the food in the canteen or the cafeteria still not great?
Sometimes it's really bad. Like, last night it wasn't that bad. It was vegan schnitzel, which was just basically, corn. And then they had a Thai fish cake, which looked, good as well, which they've done before. There's, wedges. It's not particularly, nutritional, and the veg is horrid.
Well, you don't eat
veg
anyway.
I do.
Well, a bit of stir fry with a good sauce on it and everything.
No, I'll
sort
eat
of
veg.
Like eating sweets.
I'll eat veg, but that it's bad, Dad. It's like mushy cabbage. It's just always so bad. Mm. Anyway, easily could just be a little bit of a cold. Mm. But I did think this morning, you're over 65.
Yes.
You know?
I am.
Potentially, should I even be, should I be coming... over
that you might be passing the coronavirus.
Well, very easy, the coronavirus anyway, I was reading about it, and the coronavirus is basically just the common cold. It's this COVID-19 strand that's this bad one. I think it's way more scary than I thought it was. Initially, I thought, oh, it's just this swine flu thing. There's always mass eruption of people saying that they're really worried about it. And also, I think kind of people like to be a bit like, oh, it's dramatic, it's exciting, whatever. But I think now it's getting to the point where people are actually like...
Yes, I mean, initially you could make jokes about it if you like, because the only people who are dying were foreigners. foreigners, but now we're getting people in the UK dying. It's not a joke anymore. Only joking about the foreigners, of course.
Of course, obviously.
You realise that. Well, see, you've got to have to, if you joke these days, you really do have to point out that it is only a joke.
That's such a gammon thing to say. I know. If it's funny, people will laugh, and then you'll know it's a joke.
No, not if it's... You ask any comedian if the atmosphere has slightly changed these days from what it was even 5, 10 years ago, and I think they'll tell you it has. Speaking of snowflakes, there's a story in the papers this week, very encouraging for those of us from the gammon generation who are fathers of snowflakes, like myself. And that is that you, are, well, I'll read you the headline. This was in the Times. It said, "Snowflakes, Generation Z, are icily determined job hunters."
Nice use of the word icily there.
Are you icily determined, would you say? You don't seem that icy to me.
I don't... I'm not a massively determined person in any way. I've got your genes, I'd say,
right,
there.
Right.
You know what you said? I was like maybe maybe 12 or something, and I said, "Oh God, like, what's your biggest wisdom or whatever?" And you said something about just like, just do the bare minimum to get by, always.
Yeah, well,
and I've taken that through with me.
Well done. I'd rather you'd have been more icily determined. But apparently your generation is. This is a study that's been done by somebody or other. It says that there's a steely-eyed pragmatism. So not just icy, but steely-eyed.
We are more pragmatic than... like millennials.
That's exactly what it says. Yeah. The comparison is between Gen Z, yourself, and millennials, your three siblings. It says, studies revealed the pragmatism behind Generation Z, approximately those born between 1995 and 2012, for any, because people are still confused what's Generation Z and what's Generation X, Generation Y, and all that. Particularly when compared with the generation that preceded you, that's the millennials, Generation Z are looking for post-graduation jobs more than any group of young people has before them, with 60% of recent graduates securing employment before leaving university. I mean, you'd rather like to have a job lined up before leaving university.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's what everyone would want.
Yeah.
Because if not, you fall into a thing of
yes,
you don't know what you're doing.
You don't know what you're doing. That's true.
It was just a massive like shift, isn't it, as well? Like, I'm already thinking about like having finished, well, almost finished my first year, and it has gone in like the blink of an eye, that I've only really got to do this like three more times. One of those I'm abroad for a year, that'll go probably even quicker. What do I do at the end of it? Because it's going from such a structured thing where you know exactly who you are, you're a student, you know exactly what you're doing, to then being thrown out. Actually, I think that transition is probably even more difficult than between school and university.
Yeah, well, more than 30% found a job before their final year of university. That's more than 30% of you people. While 27% were successful during their final year. Fewer than half of millennials got work before graduating. So your siblings weren't, and I'm just trying to think back. I know Anna, your oldest sister, she did a ski season, didn't she?
But that was later. That was quite a bit later.
She left a job and then went.
She did a lot of different jobs. She worked for Stagecoach and Arte's, which are all like theatre companies and stuff, and then did that later on.
Yeah.
But she also worked for like in Debenhams and stuff, which I think is what a lot of people did.
The survey's been done by somebody called Milk Round, the student recruiter. So I suppose they've got a sort of stake in trying to get publicity for what they do. That's the problem with these surveys. You can never quite trust the accuracy of them. It also found that 27% of young people began their job search in their second year, which is more than double that of millennials. Which is more than double that of millennials. 15% started in their first year. Can you imagine looking for a job now?
I cannot imagine it. I also have absolutely no idea what I want to do.
No.
I guess maybe it's different if you're in a really like practical or like vocational course. My course doesn't really directly lead. I guess like diplomatic work is what some people do, or translation work.
Or media.
Media, yeah, I suppose. But it's not like if you do nursing, then you become a nurse. you know.
No, I know what you mean. It's not.
It's not the same.
It's not maybe, focused like that. It's a shame, really. You don't know anyone in the media who could perhaps point you out. There's some quotes here from somebody who did that, starting their first year. Georgie Kemp, 23, a search engine optimization. This is what her job is. She's Georgie Kemp. She's 23. She's a search engine optimization executive.
See, this is the thing. Like, there are so many jobs that you just have never even heard of. Like, I wouldn't know where to begin looking.
No, she's a search engine.
I get search engine optimization.
Executive. It doesn't sound that executive. Anyway, she is an executive. She studied marketing at Nottingham Trent University and started her job search early. And there were lots of quotes. So they've sort of put her up to do the quotes and all that. She says, a lot of people said that first year of uni doesn't count. I knew it did, she said. I was going to a lot of networking events on my own.
I hope it doesn't. I've not been to a single one.
No. What is it? What a networking?
Less for my course again. They do a lot of networking events where it's like meet people in the industry of whatever and
but
blah, blah, blah.
There's no industry of languages, but...
I think they have done some. I don't know. I really don't know what it would be. You do it a lot if you do law. If you do law, you go to them a lot and you have to go from your first year because if not, you won't get a place at like a law firm. I was reading some stuff and there was an article in the BBC News that was talking about using dog walking to improve mental health at universities. So
they bring in dogs for you to walk?
Yeah. So Luke Davies...
You couldn't have a dog in your...
No. Luke Davies, who is the secretary of the Sussex Uni Dog Walking Society, says the dogs just give you the love that you feel like you crave while you're at university. And the society's members have said interacting with the 45 dogs they have, which are a lot of dogs, actually, a lot of dogs, help their mental health and stress related to their work. They also have today, I think it's on, R&R, which is that rest and relaxation?
Rest and recreation, I think.
Yeah, or whatever. Dog walking, like eventing at York. They also had like a dog, like a come in and pet the dogs thing at the uni as well.
R&R is rest and recreation, which is what the American soldiers in Vietnam used to go to some nearby country, I don't know, Korea, Japan or something, for rest and recreation because it was considered the pressures of the Vietnam War were so great they needed R&R. Are we now saying that the pressures of being at university are so...
Why, was that where it's first coined?
Well, it was. It's for soldiers because of the pressures and stresses of war. They need R&R.
Uni, much like war.
we're now saying York Uni is a war zone, basically.
But anyway, they do it at a lot of different universities, like dog, like bringing in dogs for mental health.
Soothe stress.
Yeah. But I just think it is maybe the worst. Not because I love dogs as much as the next person, but it just feels very much like a university putting a plaster over mental health issues and not providing actual mental health services, but rather just saying, oh, I hope this makes you feel a bit better.
But don't
like,
they...
it's not really dealing with any of the underlying issues.
But don't they have departments that do?
But they're massively underfunded and understaffed. And
so as far as pastoral care goes, if you were feeling a bit wobbly, where would you go for pastoral care at York Uni? There must be a department.
There's probably Open Door is a thing that's in their counsellors that you can talk to and stuff. And I do think that is true, but it's also, I think, one of the massive problems is in terms of like university dealing with mental health is that it's all reactionary. You've got a problem, here's someone to talk to, or like... You feeling stressed? Here's some, but why have so many more students got mental health problems? Like, I think they need to go back to like the cause of it and not just deal with people's symptoms afterwards.
It's a stressful business.
Yeah, it's
a
stressful business.
You know,
but I just think that it shouldn't get to the point where you...
Well, it shouldn't, but when you think of what we were talking about just a moment ago about people looking for jobs in their first year at university, you can feel... I mean, I know you're not doing that, and a lot of people wouldn't do that and would consider it to be extreme, but you can feel the pressure there. That, you know, when I was at university, admittedly I only did 1 year, but when I was at university, nobody in the first year was worried that we wouldn't... I mean, it's partly a financial thing, isn't it, with the fees and everything, but nobody in the first year was worried, what am I going to do after uni? You'd at least settle down for a year at uni first. Yeah. So you can see where the stress arises from, but you can't see that it's it's within the university's power to actually do anything about that. That's life, isn't it? That's stress.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe not the university's power, but it seems like a lot of the mental health facilities are just kind of taping over the stuff rather than actually dealing with any of it in any, mainly because there's not the time or the money.
Well,
I think
that's,
that's what it comes
that's
down
precisely
to.
Precisely it.
It's much cheaper to get a few dogs in than it is to.
But the dogs
to
may
send
help.
People to proper therapy.
You know, but the dogs.
Yeah, yeah. I think therapy is a massive thing.
If you're on the brink of suicide, probably stroking a dog's not going to help that much. But if you just feel you like a bit of soothing relaxation, I think the dogs.
Yeah,
will
yeah,
help.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely true. I think that it's a great thing.
Are you going to go and stroke some dogs?
No, I'm not there. I'm here instead. Just putting myself in another highly pressured situation rather than stroking dogs.
Well, I'm sorry for talking to me, it's so highly pressured.
I do think that it's great, but I don't think it improves mental health. I think it's a nice thing for people to de-stress, but I think the idea that dog walking improves your mental health, I guess, in some sense, because it makes you de-stress. But
yes, I think if
your mental health is like, if you've got poor mental health, I don't think that stroking a dog is the answer. I also think we use the term mental health problems way too laxly.
Lightly.
Or like anxiety or whatever. Like, no, you just feel a bit anxious, you just feel a bit stressed. And then I think it undermines when people do genuinely have mental health problems.
I've been slightly worried lately, Ruth.
Have you?
Because I post this up on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm always looking for pictures that, you know, things that we've been talking about. And because we've been talking about, you know, when we first started doing it, we would talk about the Kardashians or Love Island, things that are easily illustrated. Mm. We don't actually, you know, we talk about slightly more interesting issues in, you know, the way university.
More interesting than the Kardashians.
Mildly more interesting than the Kardashians. So I just wondered if you follow any of these, you know, because you suddenly stop watching TV. Are you watching anything on TV or streaming? What are you streaming at the moment?
Not much, really. Honestly, do not watch that much TV. But what me and a couple of my flatmates did get obsessed about was Love Is Blind. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't. What
service is it on? I can't believe you've not heard of this. It's on Netflix. It must be just a generational thing, because you honestly would have had to be hiding under a rock to have not heard of it. For me,
well,
yeah.
I go onto Netflix quite often, and because I go on under my sign in, it will put on stuff because I watch sports documentaries quite a lot. So it puts on, you know, the program about the Philadelphia Eagles, which you're probably not watching.
No, I like the sport. I watch a lot of the sports programs. They get recommended for me because I love a sports drama.
Oh, yeah, these are documentaries.
Not a documentary, but sometimes it gets confused.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't get Love Is Blind. I get Hunters comes up there a lot, and The Crown and things like that, but I don't get Love Is Blind.
So Love Is Blind is a new reality TV show that they made. I think it's probably just for Netflix, and it's an American one, and they have to date for a while in these, like, pod things where you don't get to see the other person, and then you have to propose to them without having seen them, and then you get to see them. So it answers the question, is love truly blind or whatever? But obviously it's American, so they were all very attractive. same age, same build, all thin. I don't think it really answers the question of is love blind. But honestly, if you want to get the clearest view of how Americans are so different to British people, you have to watch this programme, because it's like 2 days in, they've been on like two dates and chatted for 40 minutes and they're already saying, I love you. Like, they're like crying to each other and saying, I love you across the pods, and you just cannot. The programme, it's one of those things that just wouldn't work with British people. And then they get engaged and it was all wild. And then they have to do this, the end of the programme.
So are they saying, I love you without having seen each other?
Yeah. And they get engaged without having seen each other as well. They propose. And then.
What are the pods? What are these pods?
Oh, they're just like little rooms where there's like, it's just a box, and then there's like a, almost like a mirror type thing, which the person is like sat on the other side. It's not a mirror, it's like a door kind of thing, but it's not, you can't go through it or anything. Then you just can't see the other person, and they're in the pod. Like, the finale of it is they all get married, and they walk down the aisle, and then they choose whether to say I do or I don't. And so some of them say I do, and then they're like, and will you take him or whatever? And then they're like, I don't. And then there was a girl, and she ran out of the wedding, and she was running down a dirt track in her wedding dress. It was really great, excellent TV.
It sounds brilliant. I love
the way... It's about a year later, and two of the couples, Cameron and Lauren, and Barnett and Amber, are still together, and Giannina and Damien, I think, they said, "I don't," in the wedding. Oh, well, he said, "I don't," she said, "I do." Sorry, spoilers. But I doubt any of you are going to watch it. It's probably not the demographic, really. And they split up or whatever, and then they got back together, and now they're still together.
Right. So in a way, it's quite an interesting sociological experiment.
That's what they always, these reality TV things, they always call it a social experiment to give it legitimacy.
But they could call it a bit of an ethnographic experiment, if you like, because a lot of Pakistanis, a lot of people from South Asia, they do have arranged marriages. Arranged marriages are still quite a thing,
and that's the same sort of thing, isn't it?
Because they get married without seeing each other.
Kind of, yeah. I think arranged marriages actually can work in so many ways, and in a lot of ways, I think they're actually probably better than normal marriages because I think if you don't have that instant, infatuation, like sparks or whatever, then actually what you do is just grow to love each other over a longer period of time because of like proximity and stuff. One of the reasons why they so often don't end in divorce is obviously because of the cultures that they happen in. Like divorce is more of a taboo. Mm-hmm. But I think there probably is also something to be said of they make healthy marriages.
Well, I'm glad you approve of arranged marriage because I'd like you to meet Dean. I've been corresponding with him on the internet and he's just waiting outside.
No, I obviously don't. I can, and I'm like massively sexist in many cultures and blah blah blah. Like, there's a whole host of reasons why they're bad.
Yeah.
But I just think is something to be said for marriages. They're already like an economic and practical proposition. Why not add in the fact like you don't have chemistry with them? I think marriage.
What you're saying is chemistry is overrated. And many years ago, when I first started out in journalism, I did an interview with somebody who was in an arranged marriage, which in those days, you know, there wasn't much about it in the papers. I'm talking about early 70s now. And I interviewed someone and they said, yes, in your culture, you marry the one you love. In our culture, we love the one we marry.
Mm.
And it was almost exactly what you were saying.
I hugely think that, like, marriage is way less romantic than is assumed.
Hmm. Well, I hope you haven't just picked all this up from home.
Is that... I don't know whether that's quite like a pessimistic view to take of it.
Well, maybe realistic. But, maybe one of these icily, whatever it was before, icily determined Generation Zs.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Should we have some music?
Yes, absolutely.
We'll start with mine. It's somebody called Iris Dement. Have you heard of Iris Dement?
No.
Well, in that case, I think you'll really enjoy this.
Go on now and say goodbye to our town, to our town. Can't you see the sun setting down on our town, on our town? Good night. Up the street beside the red neon light, that's where I met my baby.
There you go, Iris Dement.
I love it. It's got a lot of the Dolly Partons about it.
Well, I thought, as you said, you were Dolly Parton's number one fan. Was he number one or number two?
No, it was in the top 1% of Dolly Parton fans.
Top 1% of Dolly Parton fans on Spotify. I thought you'd enjoy that because I was thinking to myself, I must find a really, really great country song. And I used to play that. It came out round about the early 90s or late 80s.
Oh, really?
Mid to late 80s,
but it sounds older.
Well, I'll tell you a bit about it, but it came out then and I played it on the radio. heck of a lot. In fact, I got into trouble for playing it all the time on the radio. Why do you keep playing that record? And I said, well, I absolutely love it. It's very sort of melancholic. Mm. She talks about, you know, this town. She's obviously in some one-horse American town, and she talks about it being, you know, the lights going out in our town, that sort of thing. You'll have to look it up on Spotify and put it on your list because it's such a great record. I'll tell you a bit about her. Iris Luella Dement, an American two-time Grammy-nominated singer and songwriter. She was born in Paragould, Arkansas, so, you know, authentic. The 14th and youngest child.
Wow.
Yeah, 14th.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and youngest child of Pat Dement and wife Flora May. Iris's mother had harboured dreams of going to Nashville and starting a singing career, although she put those plans on hold to get married and obviously having the 14 kids.
It's sad, that.
Her singing voice was an inspiration and influence for her youngest daughter, Iris. She was raised in a Pentecostal household, so, you know, very religious. Family moved from Arkansas to the Los Angeles area when she was three, and she was inspired to write her first song, which was That, Our Town, by a drive through a boarded up Midwest town at the age of 25, and that was a hit, and she's had several hits since and performed together with Emmylou Harris, who I think we played, you know, Emmylou, we know all about Emmylou.
Yeah.
So put that on your list, you'll love it.
Yeah, I do, really enjoyed that one. And for me, I've got a song called Where Does the Good Go by Tegan and Sara.
Look me in the eye and tell me you don't find me attractive. Look me in the heart and tell me you won't go.
So you asked me before if I'd been watching any TV. The answer to which is basically no. The only thing that I do watch when, because it's, I find it so incredibly comforting, is Grey's Anatomy. I watch that on your Amazon. And
so you're ordering leopard skin ears and watching programmes on Amazon.
But
I'm glad Amazon Prime's working for you.
Grey's Anatomy is probably the only thing that I've like just, I like don't even binge watch it really. I just watch half an episode every so often or whatever. But then I've stopped watching it because it jumps the shark a bit. It's one of those programmes that it starts off and it's very much like a drama, really good and stuff, and then descends into a soap opera, which they often do, these things.
Yeah, they do. There's too many. I mean, the thing is...
Yeah, they should have stopped it. So precisely. Basically, this song plays...
There's too many seasons.
Yeah. It's season 10 or something, which is exactly where it should have stopped. Christina and Meredith, who are the two main characters, who are great. Sandra Oh plays Christina, and she's honestly great in it, because also some of the people are not as good, so you can very much tell that she's a good actor.
That's from Killing Eve.
From Killing Eve, yeah. And anyway, this song, they like dance it out or whatever, and then this song is the song that plays, and I just I really like it actually as well as a song, and it reminds me of the programme, which in turn makes me feel calm.
Good. So it's sort of your equivalent of stroking dogs, watching Half an Hour Grey's Anatomy. Now, looking at the emails, John Ryder wrote to us. Now, as far as this podcast goes, our organisation, if we can call it that, did say, you know, it should be more about uni, which I think we've done. So there's a bit about uni, there's a bit about issues, and there's a bit about me being an empty nester now and all that sort of stuff. But if we're looking at university issues, this is, I don't think there's anything we can particularly have an opinion on, but I'll tell you what John Ryder has said. He says, I'd like to raise an issue, dear Martin and Ruth, that I feel will be of benefit to your parent and student listening audience alike. I'm speaking from personal experience and will keep this brief, as the full story and facts could take up your entire podcast time. My son, having gained his BA with merit at UEA, so that's University of East Anglia, then applied to do his MA there the following intake. When applying, he had all the required academic parameters and more in place, including funding and accommodation and an exemplary campus record. The admissions department, for reasons not given, turned down his MA application. My son and I challenged their decision and asked what grounds. Then they relented and accepted the said application. On the September start, his course group consisted of 36 students, of which 33 were international students. My son went on to successfully graduate a year later with a master's MA. The questions I wish to ask and bring into the open, I don't think you'll be able to have a view, but I'll tell you anyway. He says, the questions I wish to ask and bring into the open are our universities overloading admissions with international students to the detriment of UK students because of the far higher fees the universities can bank from international students? I suspect the answer is yes. That's he suspects the answer is yes. I'm not asking this through any malice or rancour, but simply to make aware to UK students and parents alike that if they are refused a master's course admission by a uni, challenge it. We just challenge it in uppercase. He says, love your talks, Martin Ruth, and all aspects of the show. Magic, he says. Best regards, Johnny, a fellow dad. So
I think they do.
Yeah.
It's a business.
It's a business, isn't it?
Why take $9,000 when you can have like 30 or whatever international, like some certain international students, depending on the country, pay?
So it's something that you...
They do it in Scotland. They fill the quota of Scottish students that they have to take, and then they take English students because they can charge the 9,000 to them and the Scottish fees are much lower. And so they just fill the quota and then everyone else, they go for the English students.
Yeah.
It's bad and I think it's wrong, but it seems common sense that they would do that.
And the only other... Fair comment. And the only other email we got... A bit low on the emails.
Yeah, low on the emails.
But whenever we say that, we get loads. Michael Edson was talking about clickbait. This will mean nothing to you, so this is one for me, I think. He says, in 1971, I was driving home and saw a Derby Evening Telegraph billboard shouting, Rams sign England striker, Rams being Derby County.
Mm.
Who could it be? He says, would it be Jeff Hurst, Martin Shivers? No, it was Frank Wignall, who played twice for England in 1964. But he did all right, though, Big Frank. And he said, hope the irons stay up. And that's from Mike.
I literally did not understand any of that.
It could have been a foreign language. Yeah. Yes. And in fact, it would have been better if it had been a foreign language.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you're studying foreign languages. This is one that I think we can say you heard it first right here on the podcast.
Wow.
Yes.
That does not happen often.
No. Well, Suzanne Moore. You remember I told you about the column that Suzanne Moore wrote in support of the Professor Selina Todd.
Yeah, yeah, who went to speak at a woman-only place.
Yeah, she was non-platformed. And she was only non-platformed because she'd also spoken to a meeting of Woman's Place UK, which at Oxford University they considered that to be
a transphobic
organisation. Well, now The Guardian has got itself into a real...
Pickle.
The Guardian's got itself into a real pickle. There are 300-odd people who've signed a petition saying that they don't want to work with Suzanne Moore because of this transphobic, as they
say. Suzanne Moore... They don't want to work with Suzanne Moore. Suzanne Moore is the one who said it's ridiculous that she's not been allowed to speak at the panel.
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I just was getting everything straight in my head.
Yes, they're no platforming Suzanne Moore now after she complained about the no platforming or what you call the cancel culture, don't you?
Mm.
Yeah.
I think cancel culture is a really great phrase.
It's a great phrase, cancel culture, and this would cover it. The pickle that The Guardian's in is The Guardian is a left-wing newspaper, liberal, woke and all that, and is generally a supporter of feminism. Suzanne Moore is a very, very staunch feminist over the years, and she says these arguments about being transphobic are diverting attention from the real enemy, is the way she puts
it. Patriarchy.
The patriarchy, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Gammons as well.
It's not gammons though. The patriarchy is not men and it's not older people, older men or anything like that.
It's just the way society's
organised. The patriarchy it's not any particular person. Like the world would be better for everyone if the patriarchy didn't exist.
I suspect that's her view as well. Melanie Phillips has written a column about this in the Times. Now Melanie Phillips is anathema to most people who are feminists and woke. When she's on Question Time, she gets a lot of
hurt.
But she makes a good point in that, when you... She goes back to the French Revolution and says, in the 18th century, the French Jacobins started by guillotining, chopping their heads off, enemies of the revolution, but then decided that certain revolutionaries were themselves enemies of the revolution. And this... Well, you've done Russian history and everything.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
It does seem to be...
Of Russia.
It does seem to be a pattern. I've never studied the French Revolution, so
no,
I
neither.
Can't. No.
My knowledge of the French Revolution is limited mostly to Les Mis, I'm not going to lie.
But really, it is ludicrous. I know little about the French Revolution, but when we're looking at cultural references, I do know a lot about Monty Python and Life of and Life of Brian. And they do this little bit of brilliant satire in there where some bloke says he's from the Judean People's Front. You know, they're fighting against the Romans. And the other one says, oh, Judean People's Front? I'm a member of the People's Front of Judea. Don't talk to me about the Judean. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these splits in revolutionary
movements. You want the same things and...
Precisely.
That's it.
And you have these ridiculous arguments, which I see this transphobic
You talk more and more and about less and less. And then, there's a quote that's like, we'll learn more and more about less and less until we know everything about nothing. I was reading another article and it was just talking about how the soft bigotry of teachers in state schools and low expectations is stopping poor pupils going to university.
So they're bigoted against poorer...
Poor students. So they just tell them, oh, I'm not sure you should go to university, I'm not sure you should do this, blah, blah, blah. And then they just end up not going because there still is a massive disparity in, like, state schools and poorer state schools. Not state schools massively, but it is... working class backgrounds or low income backgrounds where they actually don't end up going to university. And I just thought it was really interesting because I hadn't thought that that would still happen. I thought very much so, like, teachers will push students to go to university because that was my experience. I went to, like, a very academic school and it was almost, I think, the opposite in that it was too much, you have to go to university. Yeah. But I just hadn't thought that that would even happen anymore. But clearly it is, like, there was a research study into it and stuff.
Yeah. It's interesting because in 1969, the film Kes came out. You probably read the book, Barry Hines.
I've read the book, seen the film, the play.
I've seen the film, you've seen the play. So you know what it's all about.
Yeah.
And that Colin Welland, who's the teacher there, that's exactly the attitude.
Actually, I thought it was a 60s thing.
Yes, Colin Welland, and also, well, it was 69, the film came out. Colin Welland, he was one of the teachers in Kes, and the idea was when they spoke to kids... literally, they expect him to go down the pits. They expect him to be miners, didn't they? And you would have thought, well, especially there's no mining industry anymore, but you would have thought that sort of attitude had
died
changed.
Out.
Where, this is a report, is it?
Yeah, it was in... I read it on BBC News. Do you want to know something funny?
I do want to know something funny.
So I've started reading The Tab. The Tab is the university newspaper that... is like across all universities and it's written by students, but it's all about students as well. And then there's like a local version. So there's like a York student, right. York the Tab, which I was in this week.
Yes, I saw your picture.
Yeah, I got, it was like best jump. It was just me and one of my friends jumping outside a nightclub, but they like post the best of the pictures. They'll do like best photo bomb.
Would that have gone national blah, blah, blah. Or was it be just...
No, that's just on the York tab. It's not the overall tab.
I thought
tab.
You were world famous.
No, I'm just... York, it's just the York tab. But anyway, there was a lot of jokes of we were saying, oh, we're BNOC now. I've told you the term BNOC before.
You have, but I've forgotten.
Well, in case you... Yeah, if you don't remember or you didn't listen to that one, it's Big Name on Campus.
Big Name on Campus. You're a BNOC. Brilliant.
But I'm very much not. But there was a lot of jokes about that. But the tab... Well, I assume they do it in all the different ones, but the York tab is the one I've read. Are having BNOC awards.
Oh.
So you can nominate people, your friends who you think are actual BNOCs and whatever, and then you read the articles and then you can vote for who you think is the biggest BNOC, and then there'll be the ultimate thing, which is like you are the biggest.
The BNOC.
Of the NOCs.
Yeah.
And so it's really quite funny. If you fancy a read through.
Are you being nominated?
Absolutely not. You have to be like. Known by everyone. Like, you do see these things and you're like, oh yeah, I do recognise them. And then,
but you're
then
doing
whatever.
a hit award nominated podcast. Do you not?
No, not quite.
That's a shame.
But they are very funny.
I would campaign for you to be the BNOC of the BNOCs.
Corona.
I'll probably stay here. So, Ruth, you've amused us greatly in this podcast, but do you have anything specifically to amuse us?
Yes. So, your crush, this was my favourite one. It's not that funny, really. AP, keep seeing you get tagged in mini-egg posts. If you give me another chance, I'd buy all the mini-eggs in co-op.
What are the mini eggs posts?
Like memes or like Facebook, like internet posts, right, about mini eggs.
About mini eggs. It's just posts about mini eggs. Right, well, that's mildly amusing. What else do you have?
I do have a Your Fest, but it's a Your Fashion.
Yeah.
But it's got a picture in it, so I'll just describe it. It's a picture from the thick of it with a quote, but anyway, that someone else has captioned it. It says, when you fail kitchen cleaning because one of your housemates forgot to take out the bins, you're like that coffee machine, you know, from bean to cup, you F up.
That's mildly amusing.
So I thought mild. You know, what more can you go for than mildly amusing?
Well, whenever I come out with a real, absolute brilliant joke, you always say it's mildly amusing. So it's clearly.
Maybe that's a you problem, not a me problem.
That's clearly the standard. Any memes or anything?
Not really. No. I've not found anything funny enough that I thought was necessary to share.
Right, bless you.
So, no memes.
Keep looking.
I will
do. Keep looking, definitely. And we'll do it again next week.
Yes.
And thank you for listening.
Oh, we'll be back next week. And if you want to listen to the songs from this week in full, then you can go over to Spotify and just type in Ruthie and Martin, Ruthie, me and my dad, Ruthie, uni dad and me, anything. You'll find the Spotify playlist where you can listen to these songs in full and the songs from all the other weeks. And also, email us at martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
So thank you for listening and see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.